Coming Friday, April 8th, and Saturday, April 9th, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour Bible study from 4 in the afternoon Central Time on April 8th through 4 in the afternoon Central on April 9th. Issues Etc. 24. Friday, April 8th, and Saturday, April 9th. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
You know, radio is interactive in that not only I sit here and talk and you listen, but that you can also respond. We give our listeners many ways to respond to Issues Etc. When they're listening live, they can always give us a call, 877-623-MY-IE, or email us in the studio or send us a tweet or visit our Facebook fan page. When they're listening on demand, that response is a little more awkward, but we have not forgotten our on-demand listeners. That's why we have, for all of our listeners, the Issues Etc. comment line that we leave up all the time to take your questions, your comments, your show suggestions, your criticism. Whatever you want to say to us, you can say on the Issues Etc. comment line, and we'll respond to almost all of it. We can almost guarantee a response. 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. It's the Issues Etc. comment line. For the next 10 minutes, we'll be responding to some of your comments. First up, a comment about the Lutheran Confessions.
Hi, this is Julie in Ohio. Thank you for your program on the Lutheran symbolical books. I'm a former member of an ELCA church that was rapidly moving away from Lutheran doctrine and into the church growth movement. A friend of ours noted that the church constitution mentioned a book called the Lutheran Confessions in it. None of us had heard of it before, so he researched it and bought 20 copies for the Sunday school class that he led. We started reading through it as a group on Sunday mornings and realized how unscriptural it was for our church to practice open communion. For all of us having grown up in the ELCA, we had a negative view of Missouri's practice of closed communion, but our eyes were opened. To make a long story short, our family and his family and one other left the ELCA church, and we are now so grateful to be members of a Missouri Synod congregation. I believe that the study of the Lutheran Confessions is so helpful for all Lutherans. Thanks for the wonderful program.
Well, and thank you very much for listening. The Lutheran Confessions are simply the documents, the documentation, if you will, theologically, of the 16th century Reformation for the Lutheran stream of that Reformation. They start out very simple with the ecumenical creeds. They move on to a document called the Augsburg Confession, which is an occasional document written in actually to respond to the critics, to say this is what we Lutherans — they didn't call themselves Lutherans at the time — but this is what we believe. That was followed by the apology to the Augsburg Confession. That was not an apology, a defense, rather, the old meaning of the word apology. And then came several other documents that continued to clarify and explain the biblical position being taken by the reformers in the 16th century. The whole thing culminated in 1580 with the signing of the Formula of Concord and the acceptance of the entire Book of Concord. That's called the Lutheran Confessions. And they serve as the charter for Lutheranism. That is not a movement, but a confession of faith. And that's why to call yourself a Lutheran is it can mean one of two things. It can mean you think you're a Lutheran, but you're not. Which sadly, she and her friends discovered as members of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America that they thought they were Lutheran, but they weren't. And when they discovered what it really meant to be Lutheran, then they had to find a real Lutheran church to attend. And we're very glad for that. The Lutheran Confessions actually are that accessible. They are old documents. They're set in their history, but they're actually that accessible to people today who say, I really am enamored of the Reformation and its theology. I think that these Lutherans are onto something when it comes to things like justification by grace or faith alone, scripture alone, Christ alone. But that's not all there is to it. There's so much more that goes along with it, and that's what the Lutheran Confessions are really all about. Now, interesting, she and those who were studying the Lutheran Confessions when they were in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America found that they were out of step with the Reformation on the subject of closed communion. And I've actually had Lutheran pastors who say they subscribe to the Lutheran Confessions try to argue, hey, there's nothing about closed communion in the Lutheran Confessions. To which I think the best response is, yes, there is. It's called the Lutheran Confessions. It's about staking out their territory by way of confession and saying, this is what we believe. And if you do not believe this, if you believe this, welcome to the fellowship. If you do not believe this, then we certainly regard you as a fellow Christian. But we can hardly say that we are in fellowship with you. So it is very gratifying to hear that. Glad to hear that lay people are studying the Lutheran Confessions. I wish more Lutherans actually would.
Hi, guys. This is Mark from Columbia, Illinois. I'm calling with a show suggestion related to your recent interview with Eric Metaxas, the author of the new book on the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I'm about three-quarters of the way through the book, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I read some of Bonhoeffer's writings, primarily Life Together. And while there's much to admire about Bonhoeffer's intellect, life, and theology, I would like to better understand and be able to discern the good from the bad specific to his theology. For example, Bonhoeffer either studied under or had contact with liberal theologians such as Karl Barth, Adolf von Harnack, who was discipled under Schleiermacher. It also appears that his concept of cheap grace and discipleship walk a very fine line between legalism, synergism, etc., and his ecumenical emphasis may also be questionable. Don't misunderstand, I'm not questioning his courage, Christian convictions, and willingness to lay down his life for what he believed. If only we all had this level of courage. I'm interested in better understanding his theology. Thanks for your consideration, and thank God for issues, etc. Bye for now.
Well, and thanks for listening as well. He refers to a recent conversation we had with an author, last name Metaxas, and just so everyone understands, the conversation to which he refers was on Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It was a biography-level conversation. We were talking about the man, his life and his times, his life and his death and things like that. We didn't spend a lot of time talking about the details of his theology. And I think you're right in your instincts about Bonhoeffer's theology. He was a man of his times, and therefore, in that sense, he could hardly be called orthodox in the full-blown sense, especially with regard to the doctrine of Scripture. So that does warrant further study. Something that might help you, in fact, I'm convinced it will help you. Several years ago, we did a very in-depth critique of Bonhoeffer's theology with Dr. Ken Sherb. I believe it was a two-hour conversation, and to help you and our other listeners get a better picture of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, both historically and theologically, we will see to it here in the near future that we'll make that an Issues Etc. classic. We'll post it at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for it at iTunes and at our website, issuesetc.org, a two-hour conversation with Dr. Ken Sherb on the theology of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It does a very good job of explaining where he was on the theological map in his time and how we should evaluate his theology, apart from considerations about his bravery, his life, and his sacrifice, how we evaluate his theology today. Next, a comment about a recent church conference called, sadly, Change or Die.
This is Gary from Canada calling in response to the conference you mentioned about a month ago, Change or Die. I was thinking about this title, and I think the conference has it backwards. It is not the Church of Christ that should change or die, for we have Him who is the life. The Church's task is to proclaim that message to the world. You are dead in your sin. Change. Come to Jesus who is the life.
Excellent. Smartest listeners in radio. There was this conference, I think it was held loosely within the pale of the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, but it was not sponsored by in any sense endorsed by the official dumb of the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, called Change or Die. This is not a new concept. This is actually rather old and tired and hackneyed concept that somehow the church must change to fit the culture's expectations, the culture's demands and needs, or it will die. It is biblical nonsense. Let's just call it what it is, and our listener gets it absolutely right. The church's life is not derived from its connection to culture, its willingness to follow culture, its willingness to meet the cultural standards of relevance. The church's life has nothing to do with any of those things. In fact, to the world, to the culture, the church may in fact at times appear to be dead, a dead and tired institution. I think it says a lot about the mindset of someone who would put together a conference called Change or Die, whose perspective they have adopted. They've obviously, at least for the time being, adopted the culture's mindset that looks at the church as something irrelevant and dead and lifeless and anachronistic and out of step with the times. Well, the church's life comes from none other than Christ himself. He is the life of his church. And if Christ is there, and Christ's presence is not determined by the culture's standard of relevance, Christ's presence is not maintained by our willingness to change with the times or follow the wandering star of the culture. Christ's presence is there, ensured by his word, a word that itself says it does not change. The unchanging Christ remains the life of the church. He is there in his word as it is faithfully preached and taught, standing against the call for and the urge to and the impulse to change with the culture's pressure or whatever pressure is being brought upon the church. The word of Christ remains the life of the church. He manifests his life among us in that preaching, in his baptism, in his supper, in his absolution. That is the life of the church. That is the future of the church. That is what sustains the church. That's what makes the church. Those things cannot change. If they change, the church doesn't only die, the church ceases to exist. Now, let me make that clear. If we change the source of the church's life from Christ himself in his word and sacraments to what the culture demands of us by way of change, that church, small c, will not only die, it will cease to exist as a church. It may flourish in numbers. It may get packed with people, but it will no longer be the church because it will be cut off, willingly, sadly, cut off from the very life of the church, Christ himself. Now, you've heard how listeners use the Issues Etc. comment line. We want you to use it. And in this way, in the next couple of days, I want to hear your Issues Etc. story. That means how you started listening, why you listen, what's your favorite show, and why. Your Issues Etc. story, whatever it may be, on the Issues Etc. comment line before Thursday this week, 618-223-8384. When we come back, we'll talk natural law and postmodernism. For assistance, if this all confuses you, so tell me why.
Do you have an Issues Etc. story to tell? We want to hear from you. Tell us your Issues Etc. story by calling our comment line before Thursday, April 7th, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Now, the listener with the best story will receive the first three Issues Etc. books of the month for this year. 618-223-8384. 618-223-8384.
How would you like to receive a CD of one of my Easter and Ascension sermons? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, and for any size gift during the Lenten season, we'll send you a CD with two sermons. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift, before Easter Sunday, we'll send you a CD of one of my Easter and Ascension sermons.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Lives lost because of pro-abortion politics.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
America recently learned of Kermit Gosnell's filthy abortion clinic in Philadelphia and his role in the deaths of several women and hundreds of healthy, fully delivered babies. That shocking news is now followed by the revelation that his clinic was allowed to remain open because of politics. When William Casey, who was pro-life, was governor of Pennsylvania, the State Department of Health inspected abortion clinics. However, when two pro-abortion politicians, Tom Ridge and Ed Rendell, were serving as governor, the health department ceased all inspections of abortion clinics, thus allowing Gosnell's unsanitary conditions and illegal practices to go undetected.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.